We're going to continue our series in Ruth, this wonderful, wonderful book. And what an amazing story. I've fallen in love with this book again. And today we're in chapter 2. We're going to read the whole of chapter 2. And we're looking today at when Ruth meets Boaz. And is it coincidence? Or God incidents. The backdrop that I'd like to just paint is the verse from Deuteronomy 31, verse 6, where God says, I will never leave you or forsake you. And the wonderful promise in Romans chapter 8, that we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So, back to the story. Chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they answered. And Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, who does that young woman belong to? The overseer replied, she is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She came into the field and has remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? Boaz replied, I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord, she said. You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar. When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered and it amounted to an ephah, which is about 13 kilograms. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz, she said. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. She added, that man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers. There's a footnote in your Bible if you read it. Hebrew for guardian redeemer is a legal term for one who has the obligation to redeem a relative in serious difficulty, coming from Leviticus 25. Then Ruth the Moabite said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. What a lovely story. It's better than last week. Last week was a little bit of a downer. But it's so beautifully written. And last week I did compare it to Jane Austen with sort of Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility. So last week was Love and Loyalty, Prayer and Providence. I've got two for you today. Protection and Provision, and Grace and Gratitude. The book of Ruth invites us to reflect on the question how God might be involved in the joys and the hardships of our lives, working out his purposes for his glory and for our good. The story of Ruth, as you know, is set in the time of Judges, and Judges was a dark time for the people of God. The book of Judges describes the highs and lows, mostly lows, of the nation of Israel across 300 years. And the big picture throughout Judges is a cycle of the people turning away from God. There was disobedience. Then there is distress because they've turned away from God. They cry out for deliverance, and God brings deliverance. And he raises up judges like Deborah and Samson and Gideon and others. And then they forget the Lord again, and they go through the whole cycle again. That's right through the whole of the book of Judges. And it's a big picture. 300 years, what God is doing, and it's amazing. But here we have this tiny mosaic of one family and their fortunes in the midst of it all, and how God is working his salvation story. And we've been looking at providence, that name that we give to God's present activity in the world and in our lives, where he works for good. So the story so far, the family that fled to Moab, they were migrants, refugees, fleeing hardship. There was famine in the land, and there was chaos. And Naomi and Elimelech and their sons Mahlon and Chilion, go to Moab, a foreign country. And during that time, Elimelech dies, and Mahlon and Chilion marry two Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth, and then Mahlon and Chilion die as well. And Naomi is left without husband, without sons, and two daughters-in-law. Orpah stays in Moab, but Ruth cleaves to Naomi. And the highlight of chapter 1 for me is when Ruth declares, "Where you will go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried." So we come to chapter 2, and it begins with letting us into a secret. Sometimes when you watch detective shows or dramas on the telly and it's 6 parts, you have to wait till part 5 or 6 before they reveal the secret. But the writer just can't help themselves here, because in very first one of chapter 2, they let us into the secret. The writer lets us know that unknown to Naomi and Ruth, that within reach of their home there lived a man of considerable wealth and influence who was related to them, a kinsman of Naomi's late husband, Elimelech. So we as the readers are let into that secret. Boaz, okay? And the storyteller is preparing us for the info so that when Ruth meets Boaz in the story, we go, aha! Okay? So when you read it at home, you go, aha! Is it a coincidence? Or is it a God incidence? Expressing his providential rule and care, his covenant of grace. And the crucial importance of Boaz will become even more evident as the story unfolds, because family solidarity was extremely strong in ancient Israel. The wider family members had obligations to help one another when they came in times of need. The second thing we learn about Boaz is that he was a man of worth. Now, that can be read in different ways. He was a man of worth or of standing. It can mean wealth, but it can also mean that he was a good man, a godly man, a man of integrity. Rare, actually, in the time of Judges to come across a man like this. Because even Gideon and Samson and other great judges that were raised up had the most flaws that you can imagine. But Boaz is different. A godly man. And that word worth is used again in chapter 3 when Boaz actually addresses Ruth and says that she is a woman of worth. And that's why it has different meanings and connotations. One of the most important features of faith in God's providence, that we believe that God is at work in the bigger picture and the little picture, is that it teaches us that those coincidences that happen are not outside of his rule and reign. It just so happened. I love it when the writer just, it just so happened. It turned out that way. And just when she goes to that field, it just so happens that Boaz comes back to the fields. It's like our testimonies, isn't it? If you've ever been asked to give your testimony, whether it be an inspiring story in the series that we do, or whether you have chance to share your testimony day by day with your work colleagues or your friends or your family, when you look back over your life, you can see those moments that were coincidences, but now you know were not, because God was involved in all those things. The people he put in your way, the circumstances that happened. And even in the difficult times, you can see how God has weaved it for good. I remember having to do an exercise at a retreat where we drew our lives in a line, and we drew significant moments where we believed God just stepped in our lives. And it was amazing how many we had as we looked back over our lives. The providence of God. So Ruth, still unaware at this stage of who Boaz is, she doesn't even know whose field she's in at the moment. And she takes advantage of one of the provisions in the law, that of gleaning, collecting leftover crops. It comes from Leviticus 19, verse 9 to 10. It says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God." There was provision for the poor and the needy. It was the equivalent of an ancient food bank, but only for 3 months of the harvest. Since their return, Naomi and Ruth are reduced to poverty. She has had to go out into the field to glean, to collect the scraps that they may eat. Now, we can practice that law in Leviticus 2. Every time we go to the supermarket, you can buy an extra can of something and bring it to the food bank, because we are feeding people every week. Thank you for your generosity in that. But even this instruction depends on the goodness of the landowner, because not every landowner followed the law. Some landowners would say, "Well, yeah, I know it says that in the law, but I want you to pick up everything. Don't leave anything. I want to fill my barns." Boaz was a good man, a godly man. It's interesting that Ruth wants to go where she will find favor. It's like a prayer. It's not structured like a prayer. She doesn't kneel down and say, Lord, will you guide me to the field where I might find favor? But she just thinks it out. And that's prayer. When we just think stuff out and God is listening and hearing our cry, she asks that she might be found in a place where she finds favor, and she finds herself in Boaz's field, and he's actually a relative. But we know that because we've been let into the secret. What to others may be pure coincidence, we understand, as Naomi does at the end of the day, that it was an outworking of God's gracious care. Now, when we speak about God's providence, we also have to speak about free will as well, because he doesn't override that. Otherwise, we would just be puppets on strings or pawns on a cosmic chessboard being moved around. That's not how it works. God is sovereign and he is provident. We have providence, but we are still responsible for our actions. We have still responsibility for the choices that we make. And we have this mystery and we hold it together, that God's gracious providence, as we look back on our lives and see those times, he has not overridden our choice in those things. Because we know that in the between times, the bad ones we made, that was ours. Ruth goes to a field and she makes the choice physically. Boaz begins to harvest at that time. It's his choice and he turns up. In it all, it's God's grace. But his grace and his providence does not remove our responsibility or our freedom. So Boaz arrives. Boaz is a godly man. We note from the translation that Boaz was probably an Anglican. I don't know if you picked that up as we read it together. Boaz was an Anglican. He greets his workers, "The Lord be with you." And they all reply, "And there's five Anglicans amongst us." There you go. I just love it. He probably becomes a Baptist later, but I mean, you know. What I note about there is warmth and thankfulness in his greeting and the greeting of his workers. They like their boss. Do you not pick that up? And also with you, the Lord bless you. And leadership and good and godly leadership. That's why we were praying earlier that in our world, God would raise up good and godly leaders. In our world, we're so desperate for good and godly leaders. It makes such a difference. The chaos that comes with poor leadership and in it for themselves leadership and ego leadership. Whether that be on an international scale or a national scale or community scale or a church scale or a family scale, we need good and godly leadership. And we need to bring that into our everyday lives because we all have a sphere of influence. And that's how we, as the light of Christ, spread that light wherever we are, wherever we go. In your workplace, be a good and godly leader. In your home, be a good and godly leader. I don't know if the alarm's going off. You just need to silence the buzzer on the panel because I don't think there's a fire. But it does that occasionally. I don't know if anyone hear that. Where there it's gone. Good. It was just beginning to get annoying. Where was I? Leadership. We need godly leadership. Boaz is a picture of godly leadership. As we will see, he is a picture that points to the ultimate leader, Jesus. And we'll come to that as we pursue this story. It's interesting to note that Ruth regarded herself as an outsider because she was a foreigner. She actually declares that, "I'm a foreigner." But I love the way that Boaz interacts with her. He doesn't say, yeah, I know you're a Moabite, but he welcomes her as a member of the family of God. That's remarkable. She regards herself as a foreigner, an outsider, but he sees her as one who is an insider, part of the family of God. Church is a place where we need to be accepted and loved. We are not foreigners. None of us are foreigners. None of us. If we belong to Christ, we are part of the family of God. If we're seeking after Christ, we're so pleased that you have come to see who Jesus is. No one is excluded. And it's lovely that Boaz recognizes that. He recognizes her as a member of God's family. He has already heard of her. Her reputation has gone before her. He has heard of her faith, one marked out by love and loyalty. And Boaz says that she is to be treated with respect. That is not normal. A Moabite gleaning the fields would have been in danger of physical, sexual harm. But he says, no, I've told all the workers to treat you with respect. He provides protection and provision. He has gone out of his way to be kind. And Ruth humbly has asked for permission to glean, but she gratefully receives grace in abundance. She was coming to and expecting just to pick up the scraps, the leftovers, the bits left at the edge of the field. And what she picks up is lavish. An ephah, 13 kilograms of barley after it's been threshed. Hermie tells me that 1 kilo of her flour can bake 2 lovely loaves, big loaves. 13 kilograms, that's at least 26 Hermie-sized bread loaves she has from her gleaning. Isn't that wonderful? That is a picture of God's grace. When we come to Jesus and we think, oh, who am I? Who am I? I'm a sinner. And he lavishes his love, lavishes his grace on us. We receive what we do not deserve. This is a picture of that. Not only that, she's invited out for dinner as well. He says, come and share a meal with me. I don't know if she's knows she's on a date, but I think she's on a date with Boaz. She receives this abundance, but also she receives and experiences safety and security. Boaz goes above and beyond the provision of the law. Imagine the picture of Ruth making it home with 13 kilograms of flour, plus the food that she had left over from the meal. That is grace. But God's grace doesn't eliminate our freedom or free will. I think grace creates it. Living apart from God is not freedom. I've heard that said. I don't want to submit and surrender to God because I want to be free. And I say, you are not free. Living apart from God and his love and his grace leads to slavery. That's not freedom. But receiving his grace sets us free. Only Jesus can truly set us free. By his grace and in his love, he has defeated sin and death, and we are invited into his family. John gets it so wonderfully in his prologue to his gospel that Jesus gives us the right to become children of God. But we still have a choice. One of my frustrations with Alpha, I love doing Alpha, it's going well, loving the course. But there are still people who say, I don't know. And I'm thinking, is there anything else I can say? Anything else I can do? Lord, just open eyes. Because everyone has a choice. It is heartbreaking when people walk away from 8 weeks of Alpha and I have done everything in my personal preaching my heart out every week, and someone's, no, not for me. And I'm like, oh, only you, Lord. Only the Lord can open the eyes. But he doesn't override your free will. That's the mystery. I made a choice to follow Jesus, and then I realized that he had been calling me for years and years and years, and he'd been at work in my life for years and years and years. But I made the choice, but he had called me and he had chosen me, and I hold those together. I am chosen. Grace transforms us into more loving, kind, and generous people. The backdrop of the time of Judges is everyone did what was right in their eyes. But Boaz stands as someone who is different. We are to stand as people who are different. Not because we're perfect. Sometimes we get disabled by that. How can I be a witness? Because I'm terrible and I have no. We have the Holy Spirit within us. We are forgiven. We are accepted. We are loved. We have an eternity for sure in Jesus. It sets us apart because we have a hope over death that no one else has. But I love the way that Boaz prays for Ruth as well in this passage. See, the people of God pray. It's what we do. We pray. And it's like a blessing that he prays over her, that she may find provision, that she may find a blessing, that she may find the shelter under the wings of God. It's that beautiful picture, under the wings of God. In Psalm 91, we have these verses. Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, he is my refuge, my fortress, my God in whom I trust. He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. What a beautiful picture of God's protection. We are under his wings. Like that bird spreading its wings over her chicks. How Jesus longed to gather. Remember when he comes into Jerusalem, Matthew 23, verse 37. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who have killed the prophets and stoned those sent to you, how often have I longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. Free will, choice. The truth is that our hearts find no peace until they find rest in God. There is a homecoming for us because there is a home prepared for us. When we come to Jesus, we come home. Ruth gets home and declares all these things to Naomi, and Naomi is just gobsmacked and says, yes, Boaz, he's our relative, he's our guardian redeemer, and we'll find out more next week. Because the guardian or kinsman redeemer was a relative who had an obligation to help either redeem land that was lost, or redeem a person who was in slavery, or continue the line of a relative. And Naomi uses this wonderful word, kindness, again. The loving kindness of God. Jesus sets us free. He redeems us. He's paid the ransom price. He is our guardian redeemer. Next week, they meet at the threshing floor. Don't miss it. Let's pray.